guys. Tonight, I'd like to talk about the end of the end of Rabbi Yochanan and Hyrcanus, and a little bit, and also through Yanai HaMelech. Now, this is just a little bit of a review from last week. Yochanan and Hyrcanus happened to have been the son of Shimon. Shimon was the last of the Chashmonaim, the brothers of the Chashmonaim, and he was. We mentioned that all five of the sons of the Chashmonaim, they all had terrible and tragic deaths. And Yochanan, there was a plot to kill Shimon and the whole family, and Yochanan overcame that. He became the king, and he never called himself king. He was still sensitive to the Chachamim that only a king should come from Yehuda. So he called himself Nasi. And he was the Kohen Gadol as well. At some point, they were able to, actually Shimon, his father, was able to get independence from the Syrians. And there was just one time in his, as ruler, the Syrians actually came down. This was Demetrius II, and he laid a very heavy siege on Yerushalayim, to such a point that Yochanan Hyrcanus actually surrendered. And the conditions were taxes, and they had to give back some land, and we wanted an army surrendered. He was in Yerushalayim, they were besieged. And the third condition was that you allow an army to be stationed inside Yerushalayim. So Yochanan agreed to the first two, but he said, I'm not opening up Yerushalayim to your army. Well, send you some hostages. So he in fact was surrendered to that degree. Demetrius accepted that, and to such a point that on a later war to Parthia, just very interesting, Yochanan Hyrcanus actually sent soldiers to help Demetrius on a campaign against Parthia. And during the middle of campaign was going on, it was successful. That year, Shavuos came out on Sunday, and in the middle of the campaign, Demetrius stopped the war for 2 days, for Shavuos and Shavuos, in order for because he had Jewish soldiers there that were observing Shavuos. I guess he could have gone without them, or I don't know what he would have. But again, it was just said something to the point. Yochanan realized afterwards that he wouldn't have to stay like this for too long, and he was right, because there was always a contention for the throne in Syria. So within about 7 years, he was able to get back what he was no longer under Demetrius. And then he started to rebuild Eretz Yisrael. He started to conquer lands. When the Jews came back to Yerushalayim, so there was only like a 10-mile radius of what was called Judea, and Yochanan Hyrcanus actually expanded the land. If you can just go forward a bit, I don't have my thing. So I just want to stop here for a second. This happens to be a coin of Yochanan Hyrcanus. I'm not so into coins, but you know, some people are. I don't know how clear it is here, but on one side of the coin it says Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chaver V'Chaver HaYehudim, and the Chaver HaYehudim he's known as Chaver HaYehudim. He wasn't the it may say Nasi also, but Chaver HaYehudim is referring to the Sanhedrin, which some people say was not called Sanhedrin up until Yanai HaMelech. And some like coins like this, Chaver HaYehudim was the Sanhedrin body. It was the Chachamim, they were called it was called Chavar Yehudim, again out of sensitivity of not being called king. The other side is two wreaths which and a pomegranate in the middle. Pomegranate shows being fruitful, and there's a ribbon. These mean things to show success in agriculture and economics. The people that know coins will tell you what certain symbols mean on certain coins. Okay, just the next is, if you take a look at this map, the green was where before Yochanan Hyrcanus became ruler, that's what Judea looked like. And even towards the left, towards the west, that amount was only conquered by Shimon in the last few years, because Shimon wanted a port. He wanted to be able to get to the port in order to have
Akko.
Huh? Now Akko is going to be much to the north. That port was around Yaffa.
Yeah.
It was about the Yaffa port, and it was also he had to conquer more out in order to get a secure passage. I'm not sure if the place was. Where's Latron? What's that place called?
It's Highway 1.
Highway 1. So there were certain areas he had to conquer in order to assure passage. As a matter of fact, in the during from 48 to 67, or in the War of Independence, they actually were able to cut Yerushalayim off from the coast, from everything else, because the Arabs held the high land, and they were able to control the roads that went through. So right, it was a place near Latrun. It wasn't called Latrun back then. It could have been called Gadara.
They never got Latrun. They built up a bypass road.
They built something called the Burma Road.
They called it.
Right. They had Latrun for a short time. They lost it. They got it back, and it was a lot of heavy battles on that. So that's what this is. What Shimon had before. This is the green. This is what Shimon before Yochanan Hyrcanus, and Yochanan came. And so Yochanan Hyrcanus, this is what he added. He was conquering a lot for his country. Go on to the next slide. Now, one more. Okay. Now this I know we did last time. Also, just to refresh. There were two main sects, and the third one was really like a fringe, but it became important because of what's going to happen later on with them. But the first, there were two main sects, and one was the Sadducees. Is it loud enough?
Then hold it close.
I hold it close. Okay. When was the Sadducees? So the Sadducim. We know them as the Sadducim. So these were people that were to begin with students of a person by the name of Tzaddik. There were two people by the name of Tzaddik and Bisis. Maybe we'll come back to this. Go to the next slide for a second. The next slide is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. But before I just continue, up until now really we were dealing with what was happening more with the surrounding areas. Okay, so we were really dealing with the Jews and Persia and the Jews and the Greeks and the Syrians. But now there's going to be a lot of internal. And from the history now is mainly going to be focused what's happening within the country. You think that now you have a nice country for Jews, everything will be nice and everything will go smooth. But there's going to be a lot of internal strifes and civil wars, and that's what the focus is going to be now. So the Mishnah, this is the third Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. It says Antigone Shisoko Kibil Me Shimon HaTzadik. Antigone Shisoko was the student of Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik, the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and he said the following. He was known as saying, this was his saying. This is what he was, I guess, famous for saying. And his statement was, "Al tiyu ka'avadim hamashamshin esarav al manas lekalb pras." You should not be like a slave that serves his master to get reward. Elam have ka'avadim hamashamshin esarav shalom al manas lekalb pras. You should be like a master that serves a slave that serves his master, not for reward. And if you do that, v'yi morish shamayim aleichem. And if you do that, the fear of heaven will be on you. Well, this Mishnah was taken out, this saying was taken out of context by two of his students by the name of Tzadik and Baisis. And they understood from this is that there's no reward in Olam Haba. And, you serve Hashem because there's no reward coming. Just because he's supposed to fear Hashem. And that, it was a break off of the religion, and the end of religion. Basically, the focus was on Torah Shabbal Shebek Sav, the written Torah, but the oral Torah they didn't give weight to. They said that's what the rabbis made up, and they made their own things up. And very often they would take things and make them be they would take things more literal. That's the word I'm looking for, literal. And like we gave a few examples yesterday. If you can go back just one slide again. Okay, so they, but it really went more than that. The Tzedukim were more than just a religious sect. It was more like a political party as well. And they believed that only the rich should serve the country, and they know better than the masses. And they were, they had a certain following, mainly among the rich of the people. Like over here, I gave. We'll see. Okay. Let's go further a bit. Okay, so we don't have to see, but the bulk of the majority of the people were followed what they call the Perushim, or in English, all the books call it the Pharisees, which comes from the word Perushim, which comes from the word they stay away from, the secular. Today, we would be called, in Hebrew, we would be called the Charedim. Charedim stands for tremble, and those that Chared is Hashem, they tremble Hashem. In English, we're called for the New York Times, we call the right wing ultra orthodox fanatics. Right? That's same people. Just depends on who you're being labeled by. But the majority of the people always followed the Charedim, and the Tzedukim also got a more of a following from the Hellenists. You see, when the Hashmonaim had the miracle of Hanukkah and they beat out the Greeks and they sent the Syrians and the Greeks, so Hellenization, which really stood for becoming part of the general people around, which means really giving up Judaism, so that was taboo, that was out. So those Hellenists realized they would never have any influence or power with the Jews with that type of attitude or platform or however you want to say it. They knew that that was out. With all the miracles of Hanukkah and everything happening, so the discussion was no longer Judaism or Hellenism. But of course it was Judaism, but it's my Judaism as opposed to your Judaism. So that it moved the discussion over. Yochanan Hyrcanus, most of his life was very—he was a loyal, he was a frum Jew, he was a frum Yid. He actually, we have him recorded as a few of the. He made a few gezeros actually. To, one of the things he made a decree. I don't know if he had the full support of the Chachamim, but his decree was that on Chol HaMoed. And now there should be no banging. You can't have any hammer sounds, Chol HaMoed, in Yerushalayim. That was like something that he did. He also made a few decrees in the Beis HaMikdash to make it easier for Kohanim. These were things that he did, to promote Judaism. At the end of his life, he became a Tzeduki. Now, I had heard two things about this. One is You know, in the general history, when you read all the books, he became a tzaduki because he had a fallout with the Chachamim. One of the things that he fell out with, it was a story which happened again by Yanai, which had much worse consequences, is that there was one of these rumors that what happened is that Modi'in is the town where Yochanan's mother was from, the wife of Shimon, was overrun by an army. And what happens is if the town is overrun by the army, the assumption is that all of the women were defiled. Unless you have ways of figuring out that they're not, and if they can come up with witnesses, or there was hiding places. But what happened is the rumor was that Shimon's wife, Yochanan's mother, her town Modi'in was overrun by soldiers, and in fact that Shimon was not allowed to be. So what happens if the wife is defiled, and if she's forced, so she's not, she's still permitted to her husband, unless her husband's a Kohen. A Kohen is not permitted if his wife was defiled, even if she was forced. And the rumor was, listen, you're not even eligible to be a Kohen, is what they said to Yochanan and Hyrcanus. At least that was the rumor. Now the Chachamim looked into the matter, and they said that rumor is totally false. There's no basis to it. But it's like one of these things that just, you know, lingered on, and it was out there. We had a similar thing earlier in history with David HaMelech. Right, David HaMelech had this problem, had this yichus problem, because he came from Rus, right? And Rus was from Moab, and the Torah says Lo yavo amonu Moavi b'kal Hashem. That means you're not allowed to marry anybody from Moab or Rus. Is possible? You marry them, that's it. You can't marry into Klal Yisrael. So, at the time, even if you're not a Kohen, that's for anybody. That's for Amon Moav could never marry into Klal Yisrael.
That was
going to mess. So came along Boaz, who was the leader at the time, and said, Moav velo Moavis, Amon velo Amonis. It's only the males. And the reason is if you read the Torah says it's because they did not, Amon Moav didn't come and greet us when we came out of Eretz Yisrael. They should have come out and greet us with bread and water. You know, we were cousins. Avram Avinu helped load out so much. And this is the way you treat us. No midos. We don't want to have anything to do with you. So they learn out that who's responsible to go out and give and greet people with bread and water? Only the men, and not the women. But that fact that this tradition was not universally accepted in the masses, and it always came up to haunt, especially David HaMelech, when David HaMelech killed Goliath. So Shaul HaMelech was a little nervous because he knew he was from Yehuda. So his Shiloh was to his people around him, he says, do me a favor, find out if he's from Peretz or Zerach. If he's from Zerach, we don't have a problem. But if he's from Peretz, then the tradition was that the ultimate king in Mashiach is going to come from Peretz. So Doeg, who was there at the time, said back to King Shaul, before you're worried about if he's from Zerach or Peretz, you should worry if he's a Jew altogether, or if he's married into the Jew. His great-grandmother was Rus. So, and that was something that always haunted, it was something that was never fully accepted. And this story too was with Yochanan, and it's going to continue again also later with Yana. It's going to come out. There's a Gemara I have over here. So Yochanan, you know, had that's one shot that I saw. He had a falling out as he got older. Also, this Sadukim again, they're hungry for power. This is the type of people that they were. They said to him, they said, look, you know, you were very faithful to the to the Chachamim, and you know, you saw your uncles, and you know what it was. But your kids, take a look at them. They're not yeshiva guys, you know, and they're the Chachamim, the Purushim are not going to be kind to take kind to them. So they were like trying to convince, and they did at the end of Yochanan's life, to convince him to turn to the side of the Tzedukim. I did remember hearing somewhere a different shot is that Yochanan felt that he had such command of the country and it was secure enough that he was able to make overtures, you know, to the like a coalition government, you know, bring in everybody, let's make peace with the Tzedukim. And it was something that it was not something that he was not able to do, and that caused him to move closer to the Tzedukim. As a matter of fact, over here there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in the Parak Beis Mishnah Dalid, and in the middle of this Mishnah, Hillel Omer says Al Tifrosh Min Tzibor. He says don't separate. This is not the Hillel in Shammai. This is a later Hillel, I believe. Hillel Omer Al Tifrosh Min Tzibor. Don't separate from the Tzibor. And then the next one it says Ve'al Tamin Bi'Atzmacha Ad Yom Moscha. Do not believe in yourself until the day of your death. The Mefarshim definitely related, they say it's specifically talking about Yochanan Hyrcanus, after he was in his 80s, and for over, I don't know, 50 years, 60 years, he went to the Kachay Kadashim on Yom Kippur, and he turned into a Tzaduki. So a person always, even to his dying death, says Yochanan, you know, to the point, Yochanan one time was doing the Avodah, I don't think it was Yom Kippur, it couldn't have been Yom Kippur, and then all of a sudden he heard a Paschal coming out that both your sons were successful in war. And in fact, both the sons had won victories, and they had just come back from wars in the north and south. So this is, Yochanan Hyrcanus was a man of high quality and high, you know, a very, very fine person, but at the end of his life, tragically, he became closer to the Tzedukim. Okay, let's just go on. Okay, he dies in... Oh, just as a side, this is also something I find interesting. You know, when you go through Pirkei Avos, so Pirkei Avos really is the sayings of the leaders of the time. You know, and when you if you follow, what would be very interesting to note is these leaders say things, and they probably are saying things due to the circumstances that are around them. And based on what's around them, sometimes if you know what's going on around, you to find out what they're saying is it may mean something. So Yeshua ben Prachia ben Itar Beli, they were 138 to 83. This is over. They overlapped and they extended even past Yochanan Hyrcanus. So this is they were the. One was the Nasi, and one was the Av Bezdin. The Nasi of the Bezdin and the Av Bezdin. The Chachamim, they split. You know, the Yochanan Hyrcanus had enough power, being what they call the Nasi of the people politically, and the Kohen Gadol. What they did is they removed, you know, in a very strong way, the educational system from. So he had absolutely no say in halacha, in the educational system, and they had like a different nasi who was the nasi of the Bezdin. And when you follow the Zugos down, like it's Yeshua ben Prachia and Itar Beli, the first of the Zugos is the nasi, and the second is the of Bezdin. So that's always what. That's always what the what it is. The next level is going to be Shimon ben Shetach and Yehuda ben Tabai. Shimon ben Shetach is going to be the Nasi, and Yehuda ben Tabai is going to be the Av Bezdin. So if you take a look at what they were saying, I find it very interesting. Yeshua ben Prachi of an Itar Beili Kibul Mehem. This is they were Makabel from Yossi ben Yoezer, Yossi ben Yochanan. And one of them said, "Asei lecha rab u'knei lecha chaver." So one says in the positive, find yourself a rab, make for yourself a rab, and acquire for yourself a friend. Vavi denes kaladim l'kav schus. I think Nitar Bailey says pretty much the same thing, but in the negative. And he says, "Nitar Bailey harchek mishachein ra, stay away from a negative, from a bad neighbor. Al tischabil a rasha, and don't join up with Russia. And it probably what they were saying is this is a time when the Tzedukim were gaining they were gaining credence and they were gaining in the community. They weren't the Hellenists that were outside the community and being Mechal Shabbos has nothing to do with Judaism, but here they were. They were part of the community. You know, it's almost very similar to when the conservative and reform. They just opened up shuls next door. So this is the warning of Nitzar Abeli of the time. The last one is Al Tisiyashim and Apranius. Don't give up from punishment just because you see certain people who are not acting properly. Rishayim, you see them they're living the life. They're being very successful and everything is going well with them. You shouldn't say, that's it, there's no punishment, Hashem doesn't care about anything. Don't give up. Listen, Hashem has his ways and things patiently go out. So I think you see from the times what they were saying. I think I find it very interesting, what goes on around them. They're doing this now. They found just recently, about 5-6 years ago in the Warsaw ghetto, they found the notes to the Piesna Rebbe. The Piesna Rebbe was even to the end, he was one of the Rebbeim in the Warsaw ghetto. And they found his notes. One of his Talmidim, after Shabbat, he used to give a shruzim on during Shalosh Shudas. And after Shabbos, one of his Talmidim would write down the notes of what he said. Now, they just came out with a book already about it, or they're coming out. It's very interesting because we know exactly what happened that week in the Warsaw ghetto. And now they have a reference on how the Piesna Rebbe, who was talking to his Talmidim, and they all know what's going on, either in the war outside or in the ghetto, and how he's either being machazik his students, or how he is viewing everything around. So that's what the Zugos are saying, Perkei Avos. Okay, so Yochanan dies. He dies in the year 104 before the Common Era, and he dies leaving 5 sons. What happens now? We have 5 sons. I think we only have one king, one leader. So what do you do? You fight. Nothing like a family fight, right? So Yehuda Aristobulus was he took the initiative. I guess he's proactive. He kills one brother, I don't know if he kills one brother or Yana kills a brother. But he puts into jail 3 of the brothers, and one of the brothers he's friendly with. One of the brothers he gets along with, and that brother is Antigonus. So he quickly takes rule of the power himself, takes his mother, and three brothers, and he throws them in jail. The only person that he has who's out of jail, who is like his protege or whatever he's friendly with, he feels comfortable with, is Antigonus. And he sends Antigonus, the head of his army, up north to do some more conquering, and that leads to a lot of jealousy. And jealousy also leads to intrigue. And what they did is, people didn't like Antigonus and they wanted to get him killed. So what they did is, Yehuda Aristobulus had a rule, and the rule was that you check your weapons at the door. You're not allowed to come into the castle, the palace of the king, with weapons. I guess I don't know how they had the original metal detectors, but that's what they had there. And they what happened is somebody went ahead and told Antigonus, you have to quickly go to the king. The king wants to speak your brother. The king wants to speak time to take off his weapons. He went into the palace with his weapons, and an overzealous guard killed him. And that was it was a blow to Yehuda Aristobulus, and he died shortly after that. Now he was only a ruler for a year. Now was that something that really got to him and killed him? I'm not sure. They give different reasons why he died. could he have been poisoned, maybe? But after being ruler for about a year, he passed away. He died. Now, what that did is let's see the next one. Okay, so he was ruler 1 year. Some say, whoever I saw, say he was drinking. Don't drink and rule. Okay. Now what about Yehuda Aristobulus was an amazing thing. Yehuda Aristobulus made for himself a great shidduch, and the shidduch he had was Shlomis Alexandria. That was her name, also known as Queen Shlom Tzion. As a matter of fact, there's a street in Israel, a big street in Israel, in Yerushalayim, Shlom Tzion. This was her. She was a very righteous lady. She also happened to have been the sister. Her brother was Shimon ben Shattach. Now, Shimon ben Shattach is going to be the next Zugos. He's going to be the next Nasi of the Sanhedrin. And she is now the ruler because her husband's dead. The Antigonus is dead, and there are the other three brothers are in jail, along with his mother-in-law, her mother-in-law. And what she does is she hands the country back to the Perushim. Yehuda Aristobulus is more on the side of the Tzedukim, and she frees all those that are in jail. And she accepts a yibum. Now, she's married to Yehuda Aristobulus. They didn't have any children. And there's the mitzvah of yibum is that if you don't have children, so the brother of the deceased has a mitzvah of yibum to marry the brother's wife. And there's a yibum. And Yanai, which is one of the other brothers, took the mitzvah. And he married her. And when he married her, he became the king. But he became the king, so he had two more brothers he had to deal with. So he killed one brother. So, and the other brother had no designs on the throne. And I don't know what, but he just left him alone. He was like one of the guys. He didn't care about it at all. So he was gone.
Sounds like now, a Shakespearean tragedy.
Right. Yeah. It only gets from bad to worse. So in terms of tragedy, you see what power corrupts and what it does.
Absolutely.
Okay. So she accepts a yibum, and Yanai again goes from the jail to the palace. Overnight, almost like Yosef, just boom, from being thrown in jail to becoming the ruler. Okay, now Yanai, the descriptions about Yanai is he was a madman. He was fearless. He was no conscience. He could be very cruel. He was very he was very ambitious. He wanted to. He was constantly, all his years, he was constantly involved in wars. when he first became king, so again, you can imagine again, Shlomis Alexandria. So she was, she part of the condition was is look, my brother's the Rosh Yeshiva, he's the Nasi, and you have to deal with him, and you have to be nice to the Perushim, and he was. He took that upon himself to begin with. He was good, and he had a relationship with Shimon ben Shattach, which is very interesting because there's a Gemara in Yerushalmi, and it's very interesting Yerushalmi. And I may have a few more Gemaras, but what the Gemaras are trying to do is they're trying to bring a halachic point. And in the halachic point, they bring something down in history. And being Shimon ben Shattach was the Nasi, so what he did was halacha. He did was, we could learn from his actions. So what you could find within all these Gemaras, you could find something in a historical context. And this is a Gemara in Yerushalmi. It seems that there were 300 Nazirim. And usually there is, I think, a marsha that says that the word 300 is a guzma, is a exaggeration. But there were a lot of Nazirim. And then what happened is, a Nazir is, what is a Nazir? A Nazir decides to take upon himself for 30 days, he's not going to touch wine or any grape products. He stays away from anything to do with tumah, tumas ames, and he doesn't go near any person that's tame. And the third is he lets his hair grow long. And after 30 days, he's got to shave his hair, and he's got to bring a number of korbanos. And now what happens is that he had a whole bunch of nazirim, and I guess the economy went sour, the stock market crashed, and these 300 nazirim didn't have the ability to pay for their korbanos. So what do? They go to Shimon ben Shetach, and they said, Rebbe, what do? We're nazirim. We can't get out of our nazir state until we at least bring one of the have to bring their korbanos. What do? So Shimon ben Shetach goes ahead and he calls up his brother-in-law, Yanai HaMelech, and he says, listen, Yanai, there are 300 nazirim here. Let's make a deal. Why don't you sponsor 150 of them, and I'll sponsor 150 of them, and that's it. We'll solve their problems. So Yanai HaMelech said, fine. And he went ahead and he gave out the money and he sponsored all the korbanos for 150 of them. Shimon ben Shetach took the other 150 and was able to be mischarit their neder. He was able to undo their neder. So, they vowed to become a nazir, and he was able to find some loophole that they didn't have to, if you would have known it would have been so difficult or this or that, so he was able to undo their nadarim. And what happened, so that's it, so that all 300 were solved. 150 brought korbanos, and 150 even to begin with. The only thing is the Yishalmi, this is all the Gemara in Yishalmi. Yishalmi brings it at the bottom, it says when Shama Yanai Malka, when he found out that he felt he was duped, Shimon ben Shetach, he's not paying a penny, he got me to pay 150. It says because Shimon ben Shetach ubarach v'arak, and he had to run away. Now, I guess this was a breaking of a certain relationship between the two of them, but definitely Yanai HaMelech started moving away from the Perushim, and he started becoming very close to the Tzedukim. Keep going, let's go on. Again, Yanai HaMelech is very ambitious, and he keeps seeking to add to the lands and lands again throughout his 20 years or so, we'll see, of his rulership. He's constantly involved in wars, but the wars, a lot of the wars weren't necessary. It didn't help the Jewish people. They were conquering lands that, in terms of the biblical time, in terms of when the Shvatim, when the Jews came first into Eretz Yisrael, they were Jewish land, but there were no Jews there then, and the Jews really didn't have, a big interest, a big stake there. So he really never had full support for these wars. Like what are you going to war? Especially from the Chacham, just to go to war, just for the sake of war, to conquer lands, well, there's no purpose. If there's a purpose to conquer lands, if they're trouble for the Jews, the Chachamim are never pacifists. When it comes to wars that are necessary, they of course it has to be necessary. But if it's not necessary, then what are we killing? What are we using Jews to kill? What ended up happening now, and this goes back from Yochanan Hyrcanus. Yochanan Hyrcanus started conquering land also. Okay, Yanai is going to go much even further than what you saw. And in order to solve the fifth column, right, the problem, what do you do with all the people in your country that are not Jews, right? And they're going to go ahead and they're going to vote in the next coalition election, and they're going to all, they're going to vote against you. And they're not going to. So Yochanan Hyrcanus has solved the problem by forcing them to convert to Jews. And Yanai HaMelech continued that policy. Any country that he conquered, if they did not agree to support to convert to Judaism, he would kill them. There's actually a city that refused, and he overran the city. So what happened is in the south there was a tribe called the Idumeans. The Idumeans, not Edom, Idumeans. The different Edom is Esav. This is a fierce warlike tribe, and they conquered them, and they converted to Judaism. And what basically happened is this warlike tribe became like they were into the war. They weren't Jews to begin with, and they were very, you know, pro-war. And what happened is more and more of the soldiers, and eventually more of the officer class, became Idumeans, to a point where a large part, if not most, of Yanai's army were non-Jews or converted Jews, but they weren't from the Jews themselves. In Syria in 1971, so Hafez al-Assad, he became the ruler. He became the dictator of Syria, and he was from the Alawit sect. Now the Alawites, I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but the Alawite sect is a minority of the types of Arabs that are there. I don't know if they're Sunnis or Shiites, but the Alawite is a very small sect. But in order to insulate himself, in order to make sure that there's no rebellion, so he put a lot of his Alawite cousins and friends into very high and very important positions. And it worked both ways, because he said to them, he says, look, we're all in this together. If I get assassinated, all of you are out of a job, and you're probably all out of a life also. So what, they became his generals, and they became his cabinet members and his big businessmen. And even though they were a minority, they are still there, a minority in Syria, but it was a very close network, and he insulated himself with these people. Assad was able to rule very strong-handedly Syria for quite a long time. His son Bashar is still, he's not his father, but he still has the control of Syria. In the same way, Yanai HaMelech insulated himself with a lot of these Idumean mercenaries, Idumean people from the tribe. His son is going to take for himself Antipater. I think it's Antipater. I don't know how to say it. He's going to have a very close advisor whose son is going to be Herod. So from this tribe, from this doing, is going to come. Herod is going to cause untold tragedy and terrible things to the Jews.
Rebuilt the temple.
Yeah, he rebuilt it. But yeah. Okay. If you would think that Yanai, when he went to war, was a war of just a straight up line of winning. It was crazy. And just, this is an example, of one of the wars that he went through. Yanai decided he wanted, Yaffa is not enough of a port, he wants all the port cities. Now, well, the port cities were Greek cities, they were non-Jewish cities. So he decided to attack these cities.
They were originally Jewish,
no?
Before the Greeks?
Well, you're talking, the Jews were all exiled from the land in the first base of Mikdash. There were no Jews there. They were then settled by non-Jews. Oh, yeah. Before, in the first base of Mikdash, there were Jews there. But this is when there's no Jews there for now 200-300 years. There hasn't been any Jews there. All settled by Goyim, non-Jewish cities. So what happened is he went ahead and he started to attack them, and they appealed to Talmai the Eighth. We know him as the Eighth. I don't think he had an eighth by his name, but Lathyrus. Lathyrus. I don't know. That's the way you say it. So Lathyrus, and this is part of the intrigue. He was the son of Cleopatra, who was the queen of Egypt at the time. Cleopatra was like a common name, like the name Paro, president. Cleopatra, so many Cleopatras. So he was banished from the country because the queen didn't trust him, and he ended up in Cyprus as the king of Cyprus, or the ruler in Cyprus. And they pleaded to Lazarus to come help him, and he did. So meanwhile, Alexander Yanai was besieging these cities. So Talmai Lazarus came, and he defeated Alexander. Alexander ran, and Talmai then started with his army coming into the interior. He didn't stop at the coastal cities, and he started attacking. Now, when he started to attack, that was it. I mean, he could have, I don't know what he could have done to the country. I don't know if he would have taken it over totally or whatever. But what happened is, when this happened, his mother, Cleopatra, in Egypt, took this as a threat. But she was afraid that Lazarus would use this as a springboard now to go ahead and conquer Egypt. So she sent an army up north with two generals, two of her generals, two Jewish generals, to go ahead and take out Lazarus, and take out her son, which they did, and they were successful. So here, in the middle of this war against, going against these seven port cities, it ended up that he almost lost half of Israel, but he got it back because of an outside factor. And this was a constant with Alexander Yanai. He would win a few cities and lose a few cities. Okay, let's just go a little further. He conquered territories. The Decapolis, which was about 10 cities in what today is Jordan, Kiali, Syria, and he's going to die attacking Raphia. Okay, let's just keep going. These are just different conquests. And just if you take a look at this map, so the green is what. The green is what his father Yochanan Hyrcanus conquered, and you can see even more what Yanai, all the way up into Syria. He was conquering down the south and in Gaza, more of the port cities. He finally got Akko. Okay, let's go now. This really starts the real falling out. This is a Gemara in Kedushin, and it brings down the Gemara in Kedushin brings down that. Yanai HaMelech, he after conquering 60 cities, he was very successful in his thing of 60 cities, so he calls a party, and, you know, all bad things happen in parties, at least. Gemara always brings down these parties, and, like, you know, in any case, he comes back in Simcha Gedolah, and he calls all the Chachmei Yisrael, and he says, when they built the base of Mikdash, they made a party with salty food, and we're going to do the same thing. Now it says that there was one Ish late Levra, a really wicked person, Eliezer ben Poira Shemo, that was his name, Eliezer ben Poira. And he said to the Yanai HaMelech, you know, Purushan, they really don't like you. They don't like you at all. He says, so yeah, what should I do? Yanai said to him. He says, I'll tell you what you do. You listen to me. I want you to come into the party wearing the big day kuhuna, wear the tzitz between your eyes. And he wore the tzitz. And it was a zakein by the name of Yehuda ben Gedadya. And Yehuda said to Yanai HaMelech, you know, listen, Yanai, your king, that's enough for you. But what do you want to be? Leave the kuhuna to the Zerah Shel Aaron. Insinuating that Yanai doesn't deserve to be the king, doesn't deserve to be Kohen. You know, just think of it, you know, Yochanan was, his father was Kohen for 50, 60 years. He's going into Kachi Kedashim every Yom Kippur, he's doing it. And this guy is telling him, you're not a Kohen. Anyway, so he got very upset. Imo Nishpas B'modiyim, this is where it says, and they checked it, and the Chachamim said there's no truth to it, and they took this Yehuda and they gave him makos for spreading such a lie. But what happened is this Eliezer said to Yanai, he says, look, that may be good for a plain another Jew to get makos, but you're a king, hey, you're a Kohen Gadol. You know, and he was using the term king. His father, Yehuda Aristobulus, also, I'm sorry, his brother, Yudhisthira, also used the term king. He says, you deserve better. So in fact, he had him killed, and he chased away the Chachamim, and Yanai said to, I'm sure there's more to this next thing I'm about to say in the Gadata, but he said to him, well, what would be for the Torah? You know, if I get rid of all the Chachamim, what's going to be with the Torah? So Eliezer says, it'll be in the corner, whoever wants to go can get it. And the Gemara says, well, he should have answered back to Eliezer, that's very good for the Torah Shabbat Ksav. What about the Torah Shabbat Peh? But it seems that this was now the full breaking between Yanai HaMelech and the Chachamim. Now, what ends up happening now is a civil war. On one of the down south, one of his campaigns down south, Yanai was not doing well. And he lost the battle, a very good battle. And when that happened, the Perushim, the Chachamim in Yerushalayim decided, I take back, one more thing happened after that break. So he decided to take the side of the Tzedukim. Tzedukim are very Torah Shavik Sav. One of the biggest things that we have in the Beis HaMikdash, Nisach HaMayim, is the Simcha Beis HaShoeva, right? And that's what we have today on Sukkot, Simcha Beis HaShoeva. And it ended, what they did is they used to bring the water up and they used to carry the water and dance with the water from the Mei Shiloach, if you're familiar with Shalim, all the way down in the valley. They used to walk it up and dance it up into the Beis HaMikdash, and all night they would dance, every night of Sukkot. It was a 24-hour or all night, and finally in the morning they would bring this water and bring it into the Mizmeach. There's no source for the Nisach HaMayim in the Torah. There's a hint to it because there are three letters in the Torah that are big. It's a Mem, Yud, and a Mem, which is Mayim, and hints to the Nisach HaMayim to bring the Nisach HaMayim. But because there's no outward source, the Tzedukim are against it. So what did Yanai HaMelech do? He wanted to show the support for the Tzedukim. Took the water as Kohen Gadol, and instead of pouring it into the Mizbeach, he poured it on his feet in the floor. And the Jews there were so incensed that they took their estrogim and they pelted him with it. They almost killed him. But Yanai HaMelech he wouldn't stand for that. He had his army there ready. I don't know if it was pre-planned or not. I guess it depends on which source you read. And he had his army swoop down on the Jews, killing, they say, they killed about 6,000. Again, I don't know if it's a dogma, if it's exaggeration, if it's in one of the sources is Josephus. It could very well be a lot of his things are exaggerations, but many people say, no, 6,000 could have been. And that was it. Then there was a total break. But before that, I just want to just point out a Mishnah in Yuma. Very interesting Mishnah. Mishnah in Yuma, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Hey. This is talking about Yuma is Yom Kippur. And the Mishnah talks about the preparations that the Bezdin, the Sanhedrin, used to do for the Kohen Gadol. You see, in the old years, even during this time still, the Kohen Gadol knew what to do. He was a Talmud Chacham, he knew what to do. But when the Romans took over, the office of the Kohen Gadol was sold to the highest bidder. Mm. So you could have somebody who has no idea what to do. So the Sanhedrin had to instruct the Kohen Gadol, and they couldn't take it. They didn't take for granted. It could be, you're right, the Kohen Gadol knew what to do, but they went through the process of going through the checklist. This is what's going to be tomorrow. They had him practice for a whole week, and just in case he did not know. Many did know, but. So it says Masru Ziknei Bezdin LeZiknei Kohuna. So at one point, the Kohen Gadol, in practice, in preparation for the Yom Kippur, they would give the Ziknei, the Bezdin would give them over to the Ziknei Kohuna, Ve'alu L'Aliyas Beis Avtinas, and they would take them up to the roof of Beis Avtinas, which was a certain house. I think that's where they made the Ketores, the Heshbi'uhu, the Nifteru, and they would make him swear, and they would leave him, V'Holchu Lehem V'Yamrulo, and they would say Ishi Kohen Gadol. Anu shluchei Bezdin v'ata shlucheinu. We are, Ziknei Kohuna would say, we are the messengers from Bezdin, and you are going to be our shliach, our representative. Shliach Bezdin, mashbi'in anu alecha. And Bezdin made us swear to make you swear. That what? The misha shachin shmo b'vayis hazeh. Whoever, the one that has his name on this house, you're going to swear to Hashem, Shelo tishane davar mikol masha amarnu, that you can't change anything from what we tell you to do. If you're supposed to do it with this right hand and the left hand, or you're supposed to go up or down, or with whatever, do not change. Hu parish uboche, they'd have to swear, he would separate, and he would cry, the Hain Parshin and Bochin, and they would separate and they would cry. They would cry because they were forced. They'd have to make such a shua to each other. But the source of this really is that the Tzedukim started instituting changes. And therefore, in order to make sure that this person who bought the kahuna is not a Tzeduki, is not going to change from the accepted custom, they had to make this shua. So what happened is, keep going, next one. Okay, so Alexander Janius, or Yanai, wages war in the Nabataeans. I'm sorry, not south, but this is in Jordan, and he's defeated. And while he's escaping from his life, he finds out the Perushim in Yerushalayim say this is our time, and they have a revolt against Yanai HaMelech. So in Yerushalayim, he's losing from the Nabataeans, and in Yerushalayim he loses. There's a civil war taking place in Yerushalayim from the Perushim. And now Alexander, I guess he has to run somewhere. And for 6 years now, there's a civil war between the Perushim and the Tzidkim. And they're fighting each other for 6 years. Towards the end of the 6 years, the Perushim, they now go appeal to Syria. Bad move. This is always a bad thing to do when you go to the outside, you know. Like in Israel today, when the non-ruling party goes to the President of the United States and says to him, in the next election, if I win, I'll give you this and this. And that's always a very bad policy. They're not good. But in any case, they appeal to Demetrius III of Syria. Demetrius III supplies an army. So now you have an army of Demetrius III, Syrian army, with a lot of Jews, coming to attack Alexander with his army of mercenaries and Jews. And there's a big battle that takes place. Demetrius III wins. Alexander runs. That's it. He's running for his life. Now, it would have happened had everything just followed through. Yanai would probably have been caught and killed. But the Jews in Demetrius' army had Rachmanis. I guess they either, either before the battle or after the battle, they didn't want to fight Jews against Jews, so they left Demetrius. Demetrius says, what am I doing here? I'm going here to fight a Jews battle, and all the Jews that want me are not with me anymore. So he stops, packs up, and goes home. And when that happens, so Alexander finally comes back, and when he gets back into Yerushalayim, he takes over, and he does this terrible act, and this was, he takes 800 Perushim, and he's torturing them. And while he's torturing them, he takes their wives and kids, and kills them in front of their eyes, and then kills these 800, and like about 8,000 Perushim that were involved in this, they run for their lives. At that point afterwards, so then the next thing is, okay, after this 800, the Perushim take a different approach, and they say, we're not fighting this guy. Because they see, Yanai is crazy. You're just going to up the stakes. We're going to keep fighting him. He's going to keep fighting us back. And it's going to... So they decided, that's it. We're not fighting anymore. Yanai, I guess, also... at some point, also has some sobering thoughts to himself. And he sends a message to the Perushim, what concessions do you want from me for us to make peace? And the response he got back was, the only request we have is your death. And he was not able to get the Perushim. The Perushim were very cold to him. And the rest of his life, he was really not in Yerushalayim. He was not, the majority of the people that were Perushim didn't really consider him as their king. And it's really going to happen from now till the end of the Korban. The king is really not going to be the wanted king of the Jews, with few exceptions. And he's battles and battles and keep going. There's a... finally, this is okay. This is a very interesting Gemara, where this must have happened sometime after the story with the 800. Yanai says to his wife, who's still the brother of Shimon ben Shattach. Shimon ben Shattach went underground. Everybody, the Chachamim either left or they went underground. And it's very interesting where this Gemara comes in. I apologize, I'm going a little over, but I just want to finish. I just finish with Yanai. And then what Yanai says to his wife, is there anybody that knows how to bench for us? So Shlomis says to her husband, says, yeah, I'll get you somebody. I guess there was no more Perushim, no more Chachamim. And I guess the minhag was to have somebody who knew, to lead in the benching. I guess it was some sort of a royal banquet. So she says, yeah, I'll get you somebody, but you have to promise that you can't harm him. So he says, fine. So he brings out Shimon ben Shattach. And Shimon ben Shattach sits in the middle between the two of them. And he says, Shimon ben Shattach, Yanai HaMelech says to Shimon ben Shattach, You know, when he says, "Ah, you see how much I'm honoring you," and Shimon Shatach, I guess he doesn't take this too lightly. He says, "You're not honoring me. It's the Torah that's honoring me." So then, Yanai, this is the story, this is what the Gemara brings in. Yanai says to his wife, "You see, he's still rebelling against me." If that's the way to talk to a king, he's rebelling. So he says, "Okay, let's, here's the kos." He handed Shimon Shetach the kos, and he said, let's bench, you know, make the bracha for me. And, you know, bench on the kos. So Shimon Shetach turns to Yanai and he says, "What am I supposed to bench? Am I supposed to say, I can't say Nivarech, but I'm going to say Yanai v'chaverov Yivarech. I can't make the bracha unless I eat also." So what he does is he takes the wine and he drinks it all himself. He says, "I need another cup of wine. Now I could make a bracha for all of you." And he does, and that's the little quip of a story that they have. Now, the purpose of bringing in this story is just there's a machlokus in the Gemara. If you're going to lead in benching, could you lead in benching if you didn't eat a kazayis of grain? That's the purpose of the Gemara. The Gemara ends up saying is that Shimon ben Shatach had a different opinion. We don't paskin like that. But we paskin like to. But that's the way we bring in this piece, this little piece of information. Okay, so he I guess at the, towards the end of his life he tries reconciliation. He's fighting. Okay, there's a different constant different wars. Nabataean means Transjordans. He takes these different countries. There's a country here that he kills Pella. It's recorded that they didn't want to convert. He destroys the whole country. That's the type of a person he was. And next one. Okay. Yeah, he dies in a tent. He was besieging Regev. His wife, I guess, was there at the time where he called for his wife. And his wife doesn't tell the army that he died. They conquered the city of Regev. And then he tells his dying wish or his decree is that his wife should be the new regent. His wife should take over, and his son separate the monarchy from the priest. His son Yehuda Aristobulus will be the Kohen Gadol. Hyrcanus, Yehuda Hyrcanus, and you should separate the two. You're the queen. And he and Yehuda and Hyrcanus is going to be the Kohen Gadol. For those 9 years, it's going to be a very pleasant time for the Jews in Israel at the time. I just want to end off that this is a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara there is talking about hypocrites, you know, things that are hypocrites. And it brings one small little quip where on his deathbed, Rashi actually fills in the details. On his deathbed, so Shalomis was very concerned, and she said, "You know, you got into a lot of trouble with the Perushim, and what's going to happen is you're going to die, and they're going to kill us all. They're going to kill me and your two sons because you look what you did to them. So you should go ahead, and you really have to make peace with them." So his response was to them, the Gemara brings down, "Don't have any fear of the Perushim, and you don't have to have fear of the Tzedukim. The only people you have to have are the hypocrites. They dress in, you know, they dress black. They dress like they're from, but they're really not from. They do the ma'is, the very famous, you know, osei ma'isei zimri. They do terrible acts. They wrote schar Pinchas, and they want the reward of Pinchas. You know, that's the people you have to be concerned of." And Rashi says what he was saying to her. He says, "Look, the Perushim are tzaddikim. They're not going to take revenge against you, or they're not going to take revenge against the kids. They know, you know, what the father did was wrong, and they're not. You're okay. The tzaddikim are my buddies. You're not going to have problems with them either. The only people you do have to have concern are these people that act like the Perushim, but they're not really the Perushim." When he died, that was the end of the chapter, and we'll pick it up with Shalamis next time, and then the War of the Two Brothers, because then that's going to really destroy And that's going to really rip at the interior fabric of the of the Jews.
Oh my! So
all right. And I.